There's a space between the comforting vibrations of sound, a vacuum where madness builds its playground. There, with no distractions but its own, madness tarnishes my golden gleaming dream with the dullest ache of fear. There, with games for all, he invents the games I select to play with those I love, with those I trust, and with those I do not. There he manipulates. Here I follow his lead. I hear him deep in the space between my ears where no sound travels. I hear him like a shriek of primeval release, like a savage plea for mercy. I feel him strain under reason's colonization of his wasteland. He crouches on his lonely rock, surveying all he has committed in the name of oblivion. There I walk in my dreams, while my body lies latent, like snatches of a distant, different song come visions of this infinite, intangible playground. For the moment, I merely wish it to be touched. There, others have stayed, seen and heard, and forever been trapped in madness's magic maze. I have seen this maze and shall begin the journey to its center with you. And together, shall we see if we can break this maze and choke it as the Sphinx was forced its secrets. Yellow sand surrounding us, rising and falling in twists and turrets of tag. The wind is biting and whips our hair round our faces, stinging our cheeks and eyes with grains of airborne grit. Below us, we see a great dip in the dunes, a huge well in the mountains of sand that stretch into the horizon. We look at each other, take a breath, and start the descent into the crater. All at once, the floor seems to rise up and shift slightly, and before us, we suddenly see a flash of sunlight. Great shimmering crystal maze. We walk towards it, each step showing us a different perspective, colors dancing across its surface, as if its maker had somehow snatched material from a rainbow after a heavy rain and worked some mystic magic. Though it is to all appearances transparent, I cannot see beyond the impermeable surface of crystalline color. It seems a solid structure upon which light plays in incarnations of shifting indigos, blues, greens, carmelians, and sunsets as impermanent and opaque as the dunes surrounding it. Myself surrounded in darkness. It was cool inside, and as I took a step forward, my arms stretched and I felt a wall. It was uneven, like the surface of limestone, and oozed a sticky moisture that came away on my hands. Blinking, my eyes adjusted to the lack of light, and I could now vaguely make out that I was in a kind of tunnel. The ceiling was about a foot from my head, and there was enough room on either side of me to take 3 or 4 paces. Before me, the tunnel seemed to stretch out quite a distance, although I had no idea how far this distance actually was. I was intrigued by these new surroundings. The maze from the inside seemed like a natural cave of some sort, while from the outside, it had all the qualities of a man-made wonder of translucent complexity. With this realization that the internal reality of the maze was not half as attractive as the external sight of it, I felt the first pangs of trepidation come over me. What if this was a trap of some sort? A kind of ancient labyrinth with an equally ancient monster waiting to devour foolhardy trespassers. At this thought, I took a step back towards the entrance, which, to my relief, still led the way back into the sunshine. I sat down outside and pondered what to do. The dancing colors of the outer surface of the maze beckoned, enticed me with promises of wonders yet untold. As curiosity got the better of me, I convinced myself that the preliminary repulsion I had felt in the entrance was probably an intended result designed to dissuade the faint-hearted from venturing further. A test of one's mental makeup, so to speak. I rose to the challenge, and with a last look at the promise of the playful colors, I re-entered the maze. What struck me this second time was how dark it really was, and how the gateway behind me I knew was still open. And yet I could not see the sun outside, nor could I see the dunes just beyond it. It was as if an opaque veil had dropped in front of the doorway, one that I could physically pass through, but visually could not. As my eyes adjusted once again to the dark, I noticed something I had not seen before. The tunnel before me was not a single tunnel. It appeared to branch into 2, following the same direction as far as I could see, but separated by a wall. I walked tentatively forward, careful not to touch the walls with their fear-inducing ooze, and came to the crossroads. Peering down the left-hand tunnel, I saw nothing but black, oozing walls and the suggestion of something horrible. Down the right, however, I saw in the ooze the reflection of a myriad of colors, and it made me wonder how these reflections were being made. I stood there, transfixed, unable to decide between the two, for what I think was a long time, because my legs began to ache dully. I let the colors lead me down the right tunnel, though within the passage I was sure I was alone. I could hear, or thought I could, indistinct sounds coming through the walls. Sometimes they sounded like voices talking at high speed, laughing or moaning, At other times, they were more like gurgling water, the whisper of leaves, or the low grumbling and pounding of thunder. As I walked, I was left to wonder at these noises which excited the wildest imaginings in my mind. At times I would see a light shimmer ahead, only to disappear as I drew close. I fancied the tunnel was peopled by owners of the sounds, and they were magically jumping from tunnel to beyond and back again in a sort of game. Were there other veiled entrances through which I could not see? Thinking this, the next time I saw a light ahead, I ran towards it, hoping to catch the bearer. But this did no use. The light still vanished before I could glimpse its source. And each time it did, the sounds from behind the tunnel walls seemed to rise to a high-pitched giggle. 5 times I found myself at further crossroads, and each time a light in one of them would beckon me. I felt I was being led, and I, having no better way of navigation, followed. The tunnels were so convoluted and so long that in no time I was disoriented as to which direction I was going. I could have been going in circles, for all I knew. I had decided from the first to count my paces so as to have some idea of distance and time, but after I had passed 1,000, I got muddled and gave up. The sounds and running to catch the lights distracted my counting accurately. Through all this, my excitement mounted as the expectation grew in me that I was being led by some kindly, if elusive, guide to the center of the maze. I was now hopeful that this labyrinth would unravel some wondrous mystery or sight to me, and my anticipation grew with each step. My former fears of regarding a hidden monster I pushed into the back of my mind and replaced it instead with a vague worry that having reached the goal in mind, I would be unable to find my way back again. For some time now, I had been making my way down a straight passage and now came to my 6th choice. I waited for the accustomed light to point the way, but none came. The sounds which had accompanied me along my way now vanished so suddenly that all I could hear was my own breathing. I stood not knowing what to do or which route to take when from the left tunnel I heard a faint cough. This startled me so much I almost ran back the direction I had come. It sounded like it had come from a few feet in front of me, but I could make nothing in the gloom but an empty passage. I strained to see through the dark and finally, hearing no other sound, called shakily, "Is anyone there?" Instead of an answer, the darkness seemed to shift a little, so that a shadow stood in the entrance of the tunnel. This time I heard a sigh come unmistakably from the vicinity of the shadow. I stood waiting for the shadow to speak, not daring to move towards it in case it was some malevolent spirit crouching in readiness to pounce. But it merely sighed again, and sounded so sorrowful that I began to feel it was in a bad way. So I decided to speak. My name is, I started, but the shadow interrupted me. I know what your name is. It's intrusion. It's walk where you please and not give a damn about anyone. Honestly, I chose the darkest hole in the maze and still they come looking, searching, always pushing their names and their ideas and their bodies. Always so insistent and always so wrong. This tirade surprised me. It was said in a whining voice, a voice that still had no faith. Sorry, I didn't mean to intrude, I said. But I was led here by... Here I faltered, for I did not know what had led me, if indeed anything had. Oh, them, the shadow said. They're always misleading people. You're just one of many. You'd better follow me. You must be hungry and tired after your little escapade. And I suppose you're wondering who I am. Yes, I was. And more than a little intrigued by this talking shadow. I was about to ask when it shifted again, and with a loud, "Follow me!" disappeared down the tunnel he had been standing in. I ran after him and soon made out a more distinct outline of a mass. He walked crookedly and he had hair down to his waist. As I drew up beside him, I realized how small he was, about a foot and a half shorter than me. What startled me more than his dirty appearance was his complete nakedness. As my eyes adjusted to the velvet darkness, I noticed with some embarrassment that his genitals were enormous, and perhaps because of this, his walk was such that he bowed his legs to accommodate his endowments. As we walked, I averted my eyes to his face, which had on it a beard as long as his hair. He talked incessantly, mostly about things I could not understand, and occasionally he would turn to me and ask me a question I found difficult to answer. "Have you been to the Yellow Room yet?" was his first query. I said, "No, what is in this room?" He looked at me in amazement. "Ah, a baby. Well, I shall be a good midwife and make it as painless as possible." Then he asked, "What is it you're looking for?" As I had no real idea, I replied simply, "The center of the maze, I think." "Yes, good, good," he nodded. "But it is not easy to tell which is the center. It is different for everyone, and I have already found it." This revelation surprised and disappointed me. If this scuttling remnant of a man had found the center, it could not be nearly so wonderful as I had hoped. "Can you tell me the way?" I asked. This seemed to amuse him greatly, and he spent the next leg of the journey chuckling to himself and muttering indecipherable maxims. Then, as suddenly as he had started walking, he stopped. I had been so engrossed with his strange antics that I had not noticed we were no longer in a tunnel. With bright eyes twinkling in the darkness, the little man turned to face me. "Hello," he said. "My name is Eremia, and you are welcome to my home." His home was a black abyss that seemed to go up forever. I could not see the ceiling, and the walls enclosing it eluded my vision as well. "It isn't much, I know, but I like the space and the quiet," he he said quickly, perhaps seeing my dismay through the lack of light. But it was anything but quiet. All around us I could hear the swish of imagined wings. Bats, I thought, and faint whining and tappings. The whole effect was greatly unnerving, and I drew closer to Eremia for the protection against these unseen would-be assailants. Don't mind the ticks and the tocks, she said. They keep me company and are quite harmless. The ticks. I peered fearfully up to the abyss. What are they? All in good time, he muttered impatiently. He decided I needed some food and scuttled off into the gloom, leaving me standing alone, surrounded by the weird sounds. Upon his return, we sat on the floor of the cave. I had begun to call it that in my mind, and ate the selection of mushrooms and soft, juicy things which he later told me, to my horror, were moth caterpillars. In these dank conditions, I suppose that was all he lived on, and it revolted me to think that I was to partake in this meager meal for the rest of my stay here. But for now, I was curious about this cavern Eremia called his home. As we ate, giant winged creatures swooped above our heads. These he called ticks. They had an eerie whistling call and often came so close I could have touched them with my hand. The tapping sounds came from close around us, and Eremia stretched out his hand with a fat larva wriggling in his fingers to entice one of the creatures into our view. Out of the darkness came a slow-moving lizard-like creature. A tok, he told me, which snatched the squidgy slug with a dart from a long, sticky tongue. Suitably pleased with this meal, it proceeded to mount Eremia's arm, crawling onto his shoulder where it sat contentedly, delicately flicking the morsels it was offered into its mouth and peering at me through one revolving eye. Who led me here, Eremia? I ventured when we had finished eating. Not who, what, he said mysteriously. What, then? I asked, now getting a little exasperated by my situation and this odd little man. Your own thoughts, Dukeo, he said. Your expectation, your imagination, and your experience of the maze. This puzzled me, and I asked him to explain. Tell me, what did you see exactly? He said, answering my question with one of his own. Lights that disappeared when I got near. Yes, he nodded excitedly. You saw what you wanted to see. You were guided by your own perceptions and by projected expectations. What about the sounds coming through the tunnel? You heard those too? He asked with surprise. He looked at me for a while without saying anything, as if searching my face for the next thing to say. You will have an eventful journey, Dukeo, and I believe a difficult one with many distractions, but you will reach the center. But is this not the center? I asked. No, not for you. What do the sounds mean? They're like the lights, something that comes from you. I cannot tell you what they mean because I haven't heard them. Only you can do that. All I can say is you were meant to come to me first. I shall tell you all I can. The rest you must discover for yourself. After hearing this, I was all set to begin discovering, but Aremi told me to contain my excitement for a while and wait for the right time to leave. I thanked him for his hospitality and the meal, but said I would try to find the center as soon as possible. At this, he smiled and told me, to my horror, that there was no way out of this room that he could see, except the way I had come in. I would have to wait. I stood up, inwardly determined not to spend another moment in this black hole with its strange inhabitants, and decided to work my way around the edge of the cave to find the exit. Like the walls of the tunnels I had come through, the surface of the cave walls were moist with goo. They seemed to go up forever, and there was no sign of the exit for which I was searching. One section of the wall seemed to provide a perch for the ticks. There were thousands of them clinging to its surface, all vying with each other for a place on the wall. They were a quarrelsome, ugly species, grey in colour, and like giant bats, had no fur on their wings and none on their goose flesh body either. They had monstrous beaks, which they used to peck each other off the wall in order to gain themselves a perch. When one fell off, it immediately swooped back and attacked another tick, settled in its position, and the whole thing started again, so that they never seemed to be stationary or resting for any length of time. As I walked past them, they seemed to eye me up suspiciously, as if I would try to knock them off like one of their own and to claim sovereign rights to a prime spot. Their screeches never ceased, and I doubted they had a moment's peace. It seemed strange to me that of all the places in the cavern, they would fight over this one section, for there was surely room enough for them all if they would just stop pushing each other off. Finally, after walking the entire way around the cavern without success, I gave up searching. And seeing Eremia in the same spot, threw myself on the floor beside him. "You're right, there's no way out," I said. "At present," he said. I looked at him questioningly, wondering when I would be able to leave, but he seemed disinclined to enlighten me on the matter. "Tell me more about those ticks," I asked instead. "Why do they fight for a place to rest when they have an enormous chasm of space?" He smiled. "Ah, they are not as stupid as you might think. You see, the ticks eat the tocks, but the tocks eat the tick eggs, and sometimes even their chicks if they can get them. The ticks mate mid-flight and need to lay their eggs seconds afterwards in the place you saw them fighting. The rest of the cavern walls they have covered in their own excrement, which is so adhesive that any tock attempting to climb the walls in search of tick young or protection from adult ticks finds itself stuck fast in easy pickings for the ticks. Breeding wall is the only place they do not cover, but no tock would be foolish enough to attempt an ascent there. The tocks are essentially grounded, and the ticks essentially airborne, because they cannot take off from the ground positions." This sounded like an evolutionary hell to me, and I felt nauseous at the thought of my hands covered with tick excrement.